Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right, welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim, and our guest today is Miguel. So Miguel, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us where you live and what you do for a living.
Absolutely. My name is Miguel Alvarado. I live in California. I live in a town called Healdsburg. It's actually right in the middle of wine country, Sonoma County, which is about an hour and 20 minutes up north from San Francisco. What do I do for a living? So I am head of provider engineering at a company called Sundermind. Sundermind is a mental health company. So we connect therapists and clients, as we call them in the mental health space, that are looking for, mental health care.
Awesome. So can you just talk more about provider engineering? I think it'll be interesting for audience to know, because I think many people don't understand like what exactly your role entails. What does like a typical day-to-day look like for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have divided the product organization in sort of like three sections. One is consumer, which is all the parts of the product that deal directly with the clients, as we call them in the mental health world. Patients or clients are the same thing. Then we have the platform team, which is kind of sort of like, the people, the systems up and running, you know, create the DevOps tools for all the other people to consume, et cetera. And then we have provider team. So it's composed of three different teams, and we build the parts of the product that that allow providers, therapists to interact with the system. And so there is, software engineering. And then we collab tightly with our applied science team as well, because there's a clinical aspect of what we're doing. So I think where we're taking the product is to a place where we can make clinical inferences in a passive way about how a person is doing mentally. The idea is to eventually bring to life the whole concept of measurement-based care. And not to get too deep into that topic, because that's a big topic, but traditionally, when people have tried to measure mental health care, they rely on status quo questionnaires. Like there's a PHQ-9, there's the GAT-7. These are like vetted questionnaires for the psychology world. And if you want to measure somebody, see how they're doing, you know, week over week, you would have to give them one of these questionnaires every week. So it gets a little tedious. Not only that, but like, you can imagine that if you're not doing well mentally, you may not answer the questions in the best way possible. So there's a margin of error embedded in these questionnaires. But this is how people do measurement-based care today. What we think is that at some point in the future, by just interacting with Sundermind, with the different product features that we provide, we will get enough signal from all these features to then be able to make inferences automatically of how you're doing mentally. To give you one example, right? So at some point in the future next year, we want to have a audio journaling tool so that people can audio journal. And I mean, from a software perspective, it's not super complicated to, you know, implement an audio journal. On the flip side, on the applied science side of the equation, our applied science team has prototyped some things, has done a couple studies that show that we can get a lot of signal from the audio tidbits. So like with just a couple of minutes, I think it's like 3 minutes of audio, we can very accurately infer the gravity of your symptoms of anxiety and depression. So that's, that'll come next year. So anyway, in short, provider engineering is about giving capabilities to the provider to do their administrative work, but also there's a clinical aspect to it, which is like, hey, what inferences can we give to the provider that give him signal to know whether that person that they're treating is getting better, worse, or going flat?
So do you deal at all with compliance, for example? I know like in the healthcare space, like everything has to be HIPAA and all. How do you make sure? Do you have like somebody else that deals with it? Like, I guess, like, what does that look like for you?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, we do have to go through various compliances, right? So I think ISO and ISO compliance for security is important. HIPAA compliance is important. And I think it's not necessarily the responsibility of one team. We all collectively have to work on that. But I would say that it's the combination of the legal team plus the clinical team plus our platform team that basically sort of drive their roadmap for compliance.
Okay. So in terms of just Sondermind specifically, I guess, I mean, obviously, you know, like health tech is a very competitive space. What would you say separates you from your competition? I mean, obviously there's companies like BetterHelp and things like that. So what does that look like for you?
I think the model is a little bit different. So one thing that may not be very obvious to people when they just come to the website is all the things that we do for the provider. So there's a lot of really, really cool capabilities. So for one, when they come in, we say, look, we're going to take on dealing with claim submission for you. So like a lot of therapists don't even take insurance because they don't want to deal with the pain of submitting claims. And if a claim gets rejected, resubmitted, and that's a big, big drain. They could hire a company to do that for them, but now they have to spend money, you know, out of pocket from their practice, right, to for that service. So at Sondermind, we just do all of that for the provider. So we provider comes in, we deal with the credentialing part. So a provider needs to be credentialed to be able to be included into the networks of insurance companies. So we deal with the credentialing for them. And then once they're credentialed and ready to go, we submit their claims and we support a wide variety of insurances. So we have partnerships with all major insurance companies. So, you know, if you're with Cigna, well, we'll take you. If you're with Aetna, we'll take you. So now the provider doesn't have to worry about any of that. Right. And here's another really cool thing that we do. So claims, the claims process in healthcare is complicated. Let's just leave it at that. It's complicated. It's nuanced. There's some, quite honestly, some dysfunctional aspects around it that I won't get too deep into. But it's just it's painful because it's complex. It's painful to deal with. When a Sondermind therapist gives a session, we pay them right after the session. And we say, look, we pay you right away. We take the hit then to now make sure that we get that reimbursement. So there's a little risk there that we take, right? Because maybe there is a small percentage of that claim may not get reimbursed, right? And it's happened, but it's a very, very tiny percentage of the time. But it does happen every now and then. But we say, look, you're going to get paid no matter what. That's great. Therapist gives a session, provider gets paid. They don't have to deal with the pain. We incur the pain and deal with the whole thing. So that's nice from a therapist perspective. For the client, for the patient, well, it's really nice to come in and just say, hey, here's my insurance. You know, I think being somebody that has used therapy for quite a few years, it's painful to sometimes find somebody that takes insurance or, you know, if they do take insurance, maybe they say, well, you know, you can come do sessions, but I'll give you a super bill. And now you have to submit your own claims. And it's painful for the client. So we're solving sort of the problem from both sides. The other value prop is we have what we call our matching algorithm. So when you first come into Sondermind, you go through an intake process and it's a lightweight intake. I mean, I've seen much more complex intake sort of processes. But it's like five screens of questions, four or five. And I don't know, maybe total of, I want to say like 12 questions, maybe a little bit more, something, give or take. Point is, something you can fill out in like a reasonable amount of time. After you do that, we take all those inputs and then we algorithmically, we have various models that work in orchestration to then give you a recommendation of a list of providers that, you know, match sort of what you're looking for. As from a client perspective, we try our best to algorithmically match you with the best person at Sondermind. And that's always a work in progress, right? That can always get better and better and better over time. I think it's decent right now, but I think it could be much better. And it will be. And then from the other side, if you're a therapist, you come in and if you don't have any clients, we will start throwing clients at you. You'll start getting matches. Right. The problem is you come to Sondermind, you start getting matches, we deal with the claim submission process for you. So there's a lot of value add for both sides.
Makes sense.
That's in a nutshell. And that's sort of like what we have today. There's a lot more value coming up, but that's the value prop today is not necessarily what other companies are doing. So this is a very like dangerous comparison because, you know, if people hear me say this, they may take it the wrong way, but I'll say it anyway, because I think it drives a point home. It's sort of like trying to be like the Uber of mental health, right? You're matching, Uber matches drivers and riders. We match clients and therapists. And I want to be careful with that analogy because it's very different. I mean, riding Rights is lower stakes than mental health. So make no mistake, fully aware of that. But it's a good comparison, right? I mean, we are trying to industrialize the whole process of matching people and then giving both the best user experience that we can give them.
Makes sense. So how does Sondermind make money? What's the pricing structure like?
Yeah, so we make money for every session that people have, right? So the more sessions that run through the system, the more money we make, obviously. So we have an incentive to.
So it's like a percentage based on session, or is it like a flat fee?
It's a flat fee, I believe. It's nuanced too, because I think it depends. I don't want to give you the definitive answer because I don't want to get it wrong. But yeah, it's either a flat fee or a small percentage.
Awesome. So what would you say is the biggest challenge you're facing right now in your current role?
Biggest challenge is, I think, you know, we are still a startup, you know, we're a Series C company. So as many startups, if you look at our stack, if you look at our infrastructure, you know, there's a lot of room for improvement. So I think our cycle time today is not as tight as it should be. I mean, that's a metric that it's very dear to me, cycle time or lead time. Some people call it lead time, but cycle time, which is effectively the amount of time that it takes an engineer from, hey, I'm done with this code, this is my last commit, to seeing that whole atomic unit of work be in production. Like our cycle time is many days. I'm used to cycle time being hours, right? So like people, the engineers deploying multiple times a day. And it's hard if you didn't start from there early on as a company, you know, then you have to sort of untangle the whole environment and restructure in a way where, you know, you can have a very tight cycle time. You know, parts of our code base is a big monolith that shouldn't matter. There's companies that have monoliths that can have very tight cycle times. So I think, you know, getting to true continuous delivery, I think, is probably one of the biggest challenges. And one may say, well, that's kind of in the weeds. How is that a big challenge? Well, it's everything, right? Because if our cycle time is not fast enough, then everything we do in the product is going to be slow.
Makes sense. So in terms of your current engineers, is it in-house or do you use agencies? Like, how do you find the best engineers for the company?
It's all in-house. I think that Sondermind has also gone through acquisitions. So I joined Sondermind through an acquisition of a company called Mindstrong. So we brought like some of our engineers with that acquisition. There's another acquisition last year from a company called Total Brain. So that brought another set of engineers. So I think it's been through acquisitions and recruiting that Sondermind has been able to get a solid engineering team. But as you can imagine, you know, when you make acquisitions and, you know, you already had your team, you make acquisitions, you add new people, it takes a little bit of time to give all that some shape, right? You need some organizational architecture. You need to like normalize the way that we work because we all came with different ways of working. So now it's like, okay, now that we're all here, let's find a common way that we'll work that is now optimum for the new realities of what this company has now become.
Makes sense. So can you just talk more about the engineering? Obviously, like you mentioned, an AI component. So where does AI and machine learning engineering play a role into what you do?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. One that I'm actually pretty passionate about. So I think there's two ways in which we're using machine learning and AI. So our applied science team, these are more, you know, hardcore scientists and, you know, some of them, you know, data scientists, you know, have a neuroscientist in there, hardcore Bayesian statistician in there, you know. So these people are actually building machine learning models that can do more clinical inferences. They're also the ones building the models for matching, right? So they're the ones that are, you know, training models from scratch. Now, this year, the whole game changed, right? Like once OpenAI had a public API for GPT, well, and that's been available for even earlier from this year, right? But this year is when everything became very popular. And it's been in the works, right? So I've been, you know, for a couple of years, I've been following everything that's been happening with like Hugging Face and, you know, the pre-trained models available in the Hugging Face hub, right? So starting with that, and then you have in addition, you know, now the OpenAI API that exposes GPT-4, GPT-3.5 Turbo, et cetera. So now engineers have building blocks. So now there's the advent of the AI engineer. To me, an AI engineer is like either a backend engineer or distributed systems engineer that now has developed the intuition on how to use all these out-of-the-box technologies, piece them together to now bring AI to your product, right? And the idea would be that these guys are not going to be training models from scratch, but maybe they'll be fine-tuning, right? Maybe they'll fine-tune a model or two, you know, but once you reach a ceiling in performance, right? So, you know, with GPT, not only can you deliver conversational experiences, but you could even use GPT instead of a classification model, right? You could use GPT for classification problems, zero-shot classification problems. I mean, I've done experiments where zero-shot works really well, and sometimes you're surprised at how well it works, right? But if zero-shot doesn't work, maybe even just few-shot, right? So there's a lot of applications for GPT or for an LLM. Let's not just use GPT because, you know, now we'll have other models like Claude and we have Llama, right? They're pretty powerful. I default to GPT because honestly, it's the one that has given us the best results thus far. But that Claude and Llama has been giving a lot of different people very good results as well, depending on what you're trying to do. So we have formed now a small but mighty AI engineering team. So that's something that also falls under my purview. So it's three teams. So I have three teams plus this AI engineering team. So one does payments, deals with all the payments processing, claims, all that stuff. Another one is clinical differentiation. They are dealing with clinical notes and eventually a lot of the clinical features that will come from the applied science team. There's another team, which is the provider practice growth team, which helps providers grow in their practice. So the features that help with that. And now this small but mighty AI engineering team that all the teams are probably going to be interacting with. What are we doing with that team? So we're thinking about all the different things we can do. For instance, one thing that's likely going to come at the end of the year or maybe early next year, we're still trying to figure out timeline, but we're already working on this, is putting AI capabilities in the product that will make the experience of creating clinical notes easier for providers. Like one top complaint of doctors and just therapists in general is that the administrative work that they have to go through in order to be able to get claims reimbursements is painful, right? And so for us, we're thinking, well, a therapist already writes a lot of notes. These are called their psychotherapy notes, right? So when you're in therapy, you're typically like writing in a notebook. So the question is, how do we make these notes in a notebook digital? How do we give them search capabilities? Once they're digital, how do we allow them to shape them up easy in a template that we need to then do the claims reimbursements and all that without a lot of effort from their side? I'm not going to go into a lot of detail because we got to wait until these features come out, but you can start imagining how LLMs can help with all that.
That's right? Amazing.
And I think the multimodality functionality that GPT has now, as soon as that multimodality is available in the API, is going to allow us to do some pretty amazing things.
Makes sense. So what would you say is the top business priority now that we're wrapping up the year 2023 for you?
For me specifically, I guess delivering everything that we got in flight, right? I think we are, as a company in general, we're really hyper-focused on growth right now. So there's quite a few things that we're running in parallel. Just bringing those home before the end of the year would be good. There's things around payments. There's things around clinical notes. There's the AI stuff that I was talking about. So there's all these things that are in flight right now that if we could land all before the end of the year, it would be good.
Makes sense. What would you say is the one biggest piece of advice that you wish you knew before you started your career?
I think, well, there's quite a bit of advice that I would give my old self, I think. But I would say that it depends, right, on whether somebody is looking to go the leadership path or go the individual contributor path. I think that would be the first thing, you know, for people is like figure out which way you want to go. And we are lucky when I started my career back in 1996 at Microsoft, quite some time ago. Back in those days, the only way to move up the ladder was to become a manager and eventually director and eventually a VP. Now we're lucky that companies have created parallel ladders, right? So you want to go the management track, or you can go the IC track, and you can get pretty high up at the IC track and make comparable money that, say, director of engineering would make. The difference is that you're not managing teams. So I would say to people, you know, be true to yourself, you know, like what really drives you? Like figure out what is it that you love? Because if you just love coding, if that's your thing and you have no interest in growing people and, driving strategy and like building organizations and things like that. Stay true to your code, right? And just code and figure out, well, what are the steps I need to follow to grow in that area. Also, I think at the same time, be flexible in your mindset. Like nothing, not because you graduated from school and you thought you wanted to be X, it means that should be it. Like surrender to the life experience, right? Be present, stay present, and look at the signals that it's going to sound cheesy, that the universe gives you, right? To figure out what should be your next thing. Because sometimes we get very like hard-minded of like, I want to do this and things don't work out. But I really need to do this. And you keep trying and trying. Well, maybe if there's so many blockers, maybe that's not the thing for you, you know? So not that things shouldn't be hard. It's just there's different types of hard, right? That's hard, like this is a hard problem and it's taking me a lot of effort to solve. That's one kind of hard. Different kind of hard is you're trying to be something, you're trying to go into a specific role, and then you get a lot of adversity. Like it's just not working out. Like it just feels full of friction. So if you're feeling friction, just maybe it's time to turn.
Makes sense. So if somebody watching this wanted to reach out to you, do you mind sharing company website or just best way to get in contact with you?
I would say the best way is reach out on LinkedIn. I'm pretty open, so you can reach out there. I do at least eyeball all the emails that come in. Also, I mean, you can send me an email to my Sundermind email. It's malvarado@sundermind.com. You can shoot me an email there, and I will likely respond to it.
Sounds great. Well, Miguel, thank you so much for your time today, and we're rooting for you.
Yeah, thank you. I'm rooting for you guys as well.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye. Bye.